Yes, so good evening, everyone, and welcome back to what is our final Good Life Project session. That needs a bit of an doesn't it? Yeah, that's right. I know I've had a great time myself, just being here and meeting you all, and speaking to you, and actually just sharing with you why I think that Jesus holds the answers to a truly good life. But before we get too sad and emotional about the fact that it's all coming to an end, we have one more session to go, and this one's actually a really important one because tonight's sort of great truth that we're going to look at is actually a little bit different to the other three that we've looked at so far. Now, I say that because up until now, what we've been looking at is how Christianity liberates you from bad stuff. If you think back over the three truths that we've looked at since we started, that's really what we've been doing. So we looked at sort of in session one, we looked at our own imperfection and the problem that is, and how Christianity speaks into that. And then in session two, we looked at the fact that actually our imperfection has consequences. It has consequences for the world around us, for the people that we meet, but also consequences with God. But then we looked at how the work of Christ redeems us from that, how God shows us grace, and how grace really turns our lives around and changes the way that we deal with ourselves and other people and all kinds of other things. So that was session two. And then last week, we looked at how the Christian faith actually speaks into our sort of control freak tendencies and that sort of tendency that we have in modern Western culture and how it liberates us from that. So far, it's all really been about how Christianity liberates us from bad stuff. But tonight, we're looking at how Jesus not only delivers us from bad stuff, but also how he helps us grasp a hold of good stuff too. So it's not just that we escape bad stuff, but actually how Jesus changes our lives for the better. I don't know if anyone else had this when they were a kid, but when I was a kid back in the mid-80s, my mum used to buy this Neapolitan ice cream. Anyone else get that at home? Yeah, it's kind of, I don't even know if it's really a big thing these days, but back then it was before sort of good ice cream was a thing. You know how it's a thing now and there's good ice creams around. And so really mum just would go and she'd just buy these massive tubs of this stuff. And in our house, what would happen is that everyone would eat the chocolate first and then they'd eat the strawberry and then you'd end just with sort of this pillar of vanilla stuck in the middle that no one really wanted. Anyone else do that? Or was that just us? Yeah, it's happened to other people too. You're with me on that. Great. Now, the thing with that is that it's not that the vanilla was disgusting. It's still kind of sweet and sugary and tasted okay. It was just that compared to the others, it was sort of boring, wasn't it? Yeah, compared to strawberry or chocolate, it was just sort of white. It's a bit boring and no one really wanted it. And I guess what I'm trying to say tonight is that Jesus doesn't just leave you with the vanilla life. Okay, it's not just about getting rid of the bad stuff so that you're left with this thing that's just sort of kind of okay, not disgusting, but just sort of whatever. It's not that. Jesus is about giving you a great life, a life that's rich and satisfying and joyful and fulfilling. That's what Jesus is on about. Now, I hasten to add that following Jesus isn't always easy, and we're going to talk a bit more about that later on, but it is good. It is good. It is a good life project that Jesus is concerned with. And so that's what brings us to our fourth liberating truth, and that's this. God is good. And the fact that God is good means that you don't have to look elsewhere for joy and fulfillment and satisfaction. God can actually satisfy those things for you. Knowing God is good. He is the key to real, enduring, lasting and indestructible happiness, fulfillment, and satisfaction. In fact, I want to go so far as to say that if you look for ultimate happiness and satisfaction in anything else, you will eventually be disappointed. It might make you happy for a little while, but you will eventually be disappointed. So I don't know whether any of you have actually spent the time thinking through just how fragile your happiness really is. Because I think for most people, happiness is a very, very fragile thing. It's like one of those little, kind of Ming vases that if you squeeze too hard, it can crack, let alone drop the thing. Happiness is often like that. Often it doesn't take very much for it just to be smashed to bits. And you can see this in a lot of the things that people search for happiness with. So, for example, a lot of people might look to career for happiness. Now, don't get me wrong, work is a great thing. Yeah, there is a lot of joy and fulfillment and happiness in work, particularly if you're lucky enough to find a job that you're really into and that interests you and that you find fulfilling. I'm not saying that there isn't those things, but if that's the one thing that you're really relying on in terms of meaning and fulfillment, you're on shaky ground because career work is very fragile. It's so easy for that to go wrong. Yeah, and you can play it safe and you can be a great worker and you can do everything that it takes, but it can still go pear-shaped, can't it? Sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. Think about it, and maybe some of this has happened to someone here, to one of you, but you could just be, for whatever reason, overlooked for promotions. Yeah, not your fault, you've worked hard. You might think you're the best person for the job, you deserve it. But, you know, that person who doesn't really deserve it gets it instead for all kinds of unfair reasons. Happens. Through no fault of your own, you could just get stuck with a manager or a boss that just kind of has it in for you and wants to make your life miserable. All it takes sometimes is the shift in the economy or something to happen, numerous rungs up the ladder in the company, and suddenly you're facing redundancy or your funding runs out or your customers don't want to buy your product anymore. Or let's just say even that you manage to hang on to it right through your working life. If you live long enough, one day you just will be too old and you'll have to retire and then career is over. Gone. And of course, if you make it through all of that, eventually death brings an end to career once and for all. It's fragile, cracks all the time, and can ultimately fall apart no matter how carefully you try to guard it. So if career's fragile, well, what about some of the other things that we look to? Maybe you could think about health or leisure or lifestyle. Great things, don't get me wrong, fantastic things can bring you a lot of joy, can bring you a lot of happiness. In our part of the world, these are huge for people. But again, super fragile. Doesn't matter how hard you try to protect them, it can all just change in a moment, can't it? Your job gets more demanding, or you lose your current job and you have to get a new one that just eats into your leisure time. Your income drops, or that big unexpected expense comes in that just kind of kills all the extra money that you had for that holiday or hobby or whatever that thing was that you were super duper looking forward to. Then of course there's injury, there's sickness, and worst of all, something that's threatening us more and more and younger, terminal illness. You, your partner, your child. Comes without you ever expecting it. You go into the doctor's appointment with a world full of possibilities and plans and ambitions, and you leave with a time limit, a deadline. Yeah. Very hard to enjoy health and leisure when there is no health. And again, let's just say that you do make it right through to old age. You're going to lose it eventually. Just visit an aged care facility. It doesn't matter how well they did financially or how much exercise they did or how good they were at tennis or surfing or whatever. Yeah, lifestyle and health and leisure, they've got a use-by date. It runs out. And sooner or later, it will let you down. It's fragile. Let's just work through one more. What about people? People. See, for so many of us, just finding that right person, that right partner, the right spouse can seem like it's just the answer to everything. Yeah. It could be the one big thing that's holding me back from being fulfilled or happy. Maybe it's not the partner or the spouse. Maybe it's just friends, the friendship circle. Maybe it's the kids that you've had and you're kind of putting everything into them and all your hopes and dreams and happiness revolves around them and their lives. But again, people are fragile. If you think right back to session one, Yet no one's perfect. We looked at that. We established that very clearly. And that means that people can hurt you. It means that people can let you down. It means relationships, even though can at sometimes be wonderful and amazing, can at the same time be the most painful things in the world. At the end of the day, no relationship's going to be the ultimate answer. It'll never satisfy completely because people aren't perfect. Add to that the fact that they can leave you, they can get depressed, they can change and move on, they can get sick, and ultimately they'll die on you. Yeah. Happiness based on people is a very fragile thing. Now, I've just gone for three of the big ones that I see around me in society, you know. That we could do this with anything, really. If you name it, we could look for it, you know. We could go through this process and I could show you just how fragile it is, you know. Because happiness is fragile, it's fleeting, it's temporary, it's so vulnerable, it can let you down at any time and it can be snatched from you altogether without warning. Add to that the fact that ultimately none of these things ever seem to be enough anyway, because there always seems to be something else that you need. I heard a quote the other day by Eric Clapton. He's one of the greatest rock guitarists of all time. He was so good that people loved him so much that someone famously graffitied a wall deifying him, calling him God. Yeah. That's how many fans he had. But anyway, in this interview he said this. He said, "I had everything a man could want. I was a millionaire. I had beautiful women in my life. I had cars, a house, an incredible solid gold career and a future. And yet, on a daily basis, I wanted to commit suicide." That's amazing, isn't it? But to have so much, to have made it so far, to have it all and just feel that unhappy. And the thing is, he's not alone. So many people that we think have had it all, you know, that seem to have made it, that seem to have the good life, say the same kind of stuff. It's depressing. So what do we do? Is there an answer? Is the whole good life project going to yield at best just temporary results? Or is there something more? Well, once again, I actually believe that authentic Christianity does provide an answer to finding true and lasting happiness and fulfillment. And the amazing news is that this happiness and this fulfillment that it talks about isn't at all reliant upon life circumstances. Okay, that's the thing that really sets it apart, I think, to all of these other things that we've looked at. It's not reliant on your life circumstances. In other words, all hell can break loose. You can lose your money. You can lose your friends. You can lose your leisure time. You can even lose your family and still live a life of lasting happiness and fulfillment. That's the claim. So what's the secret? Well, the secret is knowing and following God. You see, the Bible teaches us that the only way that we'll ever get lasting satisfaction is through pursuing a relationship with the living God, because that is just what we're made for. It's how we're made to be. It's just what we are. And as long as we have anything else at the center of our lives, as long as we try to put anything else other than Him in that ultimate happiness sort of providing spot, we're going to be disappointed, because nothing else can live up to Him. See, the thing you've got to understand is that ultimate happiness and fulfillment is built into the way things are designed. Okay? And you see this right through the world. You see it right through nature. I don't know if anyone saw that documentary. It's on Netflix at the moment, Blackfish. Anyone watch that? No? Yeah, a few people? Great. Yeah, it's great. I mean, if you're into nature documentaries, you should definitely check it out. But it's really interesting. It's all about killer whales, obviously, living in captivity. And the interesting thing about it is that despite the sort of the safety and even the love and the regular food supply that they get, despite all the perks, a killer whale is never truly happy at SeaWorld. I hate to ruin any childhood memories anyone's got here of going there and seeing them jumping around, but they're just not happy there. Why? Well, the reason they're not happy there is because they're not designed for that. Yeah, they're not meant to live in SeaWorld. They're meant to be out in the open ocean. They've got families and these little communities that they're a part of. And it doesn't really matter how much food and stimulation and human love they get in captivity. It never is going to fulfill them. Never. Because they're just not made to be stuck in SeaWorld. And that's what the Bible claims about us, but not about SeaWorld, but rather that we're not made to be without God. Without him, we'll never reach true and lasting happiness. It's interesting, I was reading an article on the BBC website just a little while ago, not a Christian article at all, but it was called this. It was called Will Religion Ever Disappear? That was the name of the article. And really, what it was looking at was the way that in many countries now, especially more modern westernised countries, atheism is just on the increase. Now, it's going to be really interesting to see in the next census, if it ever gets done and if we ever find out about it, you know, what that's got to say about it, that happening here in Australia. But around the world, in modern westernised countries, it just seems that atheism's on the increase. And so the article's asking this question, well, does that mean that one day religion will just be done away with? You know, are we going to get to this point, sort of intellectually, where we just sort of grow out of it and realise that we don't need it anymore? And the interesting answer that the article came up with seemed to be that no, it will never be done away with. And the reason that the article seems to think that is because, and I quote, a God-shaped hole seems to exist in our species' neuropsychology. There just seems to be this God-shaped hole that exists in our species' neuropsychology. It goes on to explain that actually this God-shaped hole seems to be rooted deep within our systems one thinking. Now, that's the part of your thinking that's the sort of the intuitive, kind of instinctive part of your brain. It's the capabilities that people seem to develop regardless of where or when they're born, and it's the sort of survival mechanisms-y sort of stuff. It gives you that innate repulsion for rotting meat, you know, or the ability to speak a native language without thinking about it. It gives babies the ability to recognise parents or distinguish something that's alive from something that's not alive. It's that part of the brain. And it's saying that this impulse to want to know a god or gods is rooted at that level. Now, the article just puts it all down to being a quirk of evolution. But the Bible would say that's there because that's how we're made. It's how we're created. And this God-shaped hole just needs to be filled, and nothing but God can fill it. Anything else is going to disappoint you. Anything else cannot live up to what you need to fit in that hole. There's this verse that I particularly love, and it's all about living God's way. It's about living in the wisdom of God, knowing him, living with him. And it describes wisdom, or the wisdom of God, the wisdom of knowing God, as this beautiful, desirable woman that you just want to be with. If you're a heterosexual female here tonight, please maybe insert some hot dude there instead of the woman. But listen to what it says. It's in your Good Life journals, if you can see one of those. It's from Proverbs chapter 3, 13 to 18. And it says this. It says, blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She's more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honour. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her, and those who lay hold of her will be blessed. Now, I just love those verses. It's so poetic and just such an amazing picture of the good life, of living with God, of living in the wisdom of God. Just fantastic kind of language. But you might ask, well, what makes it so good? Why is it so good? What does God fill this hole with? And as we finish up, I just want to leave you with what I think are the top three things he leaves you with that fill that hole and why I think it's so amazing to know him. First thing is love. He fills the hole with love. Now, we noted earlier that one of the places that we often search for happiness is actually in other people. Yeah, we've got this desire, don't we, to want to love someone. We want people to love us intimately. And again, that's why a lot of us are just out to find that soulmate. We're looking for that life partner. Indeed, even when we have everything else, we still pine after love. If Freddie Mercury was one of the greatest rock stars of all time, his band Queen had millions of fans all over the world, millions of pounds. It seemed like he had everything, and yet despite all the stuff he had, just before his death, he said these words. He said, "You can have everything in the world and still be the loneliest man." And that is the most bitter type of loneliness. "Success has brought me world idolization and millions of pounds, but it's prevented me from having the one thing we all need, a loving, ongoing relationship." We need love. We need relationship. And that's what God offers you. But he offers you the ultimate love. The ultimate love. See, unlike people who will let us down, who will fail us and hurt us and ultimately die on us, God won't. Yeah? If you think some bloke or some woman will satisfy you, you will ultimately be disappointed. But God's love will never, ever let you down. As we saw a couple of weeks ago, when you look at the cross of Jesus, you see just how committed and how much he loves you. Yeah. So much, committed so much to your good, so much that he would send his only son to die in your place, to redeem you from the consequences of all of your failings and all of your imperfections, and bring you into a relationship with him. Yeah. It's the best relationship that you will ever have, and you cannot lose it. So he offers you love. But the second thing he offers you is transformation. You see, God doesn't just redeem you from your imperfection and just leave it at that. Yeah. When you enter into a relationship with him and you put your trust in Jesus and enter into that relationship, God gives you his Spirit, his Holy Spirit, and that Holy Spirit starts to go to work in your life. And slowly but surely, he chips away at you, starts changing you, starts transforming you, adjusting stuff, fixing stuff, renewing you, knocking off all the imperfect edges. Now, sometimes that's really hard. Yeah, sometimes it requires suffering and trial, and sometimes it even involves disappointment. Transformation takes hard and sometimes painful work. Yeah? And if you've ever been through counselling, if you've ever been through surgery, or if you've ever done a sort of serious fitness routine where you're trying to alter body composition or anything like that, you know transformation is tough. It is hard, but it's always worth it. And you start to see yourself grow. You'll start to see yourself change. You'll start to see yourself deal with other people differently. And as we've seen over the last three nights, you'll start to let go of needing to be in control and all of the fear that brings into your life. You'll stop fearing other people. And that won't matter to you so much anymore. And it's just so wonderful and fulfilling to see all of this take place. Life actually starts to feel better and more significant and satisfying and meaningful. So he changes your life now. You get love, you get transformation. But ultimately, and I'll finish with this, you get fulfillment. He gives you fulfillment. See, death ruins everything in the end, doesn't it? When you think about it. Doesn't matter how rich or healthy or happy you are, as we saw, death ultimately takes it all away. Death is a bummer. Yeah. But Christianity isn't about death. It's about resurrection. When Jesus was executed on the cross, he didn't stay dead, he rose again. It's what Easter Sunday is all about. And the Bible says that just as Jesus rose, so too will the rest of his people. They'll rise just like he did. And let me tell you, that resurrection life, it's not what you think. You see, often people have this kind of picture when they think about the sort of resurrection in heaven. You know, they're sort of angels blowing trumpets and sort of floating around on clouds. It just looks utterly, you'd be bored out of your brains doing that forever, wouldn't you? No thanks. That's not what we're talking about. Yeah. When you actually read your Bible, you see, that's not the resurrection life at all. What the Bible envisages when it comes to resurrection is a real, earthy, physical life with real physical bodies living in a world that's actually much like this one, except it's perfect. Much like this, but perfect. And that is the ultimate good life. Perfect life, perfect body, perfect world. And death can't stop it. It'll go on forever. So I guess I just want to wrap up by asking you to pursue it, or inviting you to. Yeah, that's the good life that Jesus holds out to you. It's free. And at Summer Lees, we want to do everything that we can just to help you take hold of it and grasp it with both hands and live it to the full. Now, later on, Jane's going to come up and she's going to mention a whole number of options that would just be really great next actions for you if you want to take us up on that invitation. There's a whole heap of stuff that you can do. But please, whichever of those that you choose, don't just let this go by. Don't just go back to the way things have always been. Why not make tonight the night that you embark on this whole new good life trajectory? And I'll leave you to think that through.
Okay. Sorry to break up your discussions. I'm going to have to break them up because we've got three questions tonight. Okay, the first one that came through. How do we know that God is not just wish fulfillment to fill the God-shaped hole? That we are not just making him up to fill that need?
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the big difference with particularly the God of the Bible is that he's done something actually in history to reveal himself to us. And I think that's where Christianity is a little bit different from perhaps a lot of other religions. In a lot of other religions, you've got a person claiming to sort of receive revelation from God. So, for example, you could look at Islam and the Quran, and that's sort of, you've got Muhammad there just getting direct revelation from God. Well, that would be his claim. Now, that's kind of very hard to test if you think about it, because you've just either got to take the guy's word for it or you don't. What you have, and later on Jane's going to talk a little bit about the Gospels and reading the Gospels in the New Testament, what you have there is someone, Jesus, coming to earth, actually claiming to be God and then doing a whole heap of spectacular stuff to back that up, not the least being coming back from the dead again. And so you've got the resurrection, you've got all of these things happening in history. Now, the tricky thing with history is, of course, you can't prove things historically the way that you can a science experiment. And this is the problem that I think courts often have, because really when you think about what you're trying to do in a court of law is you're trying to prove something that happened in history. Now, of course, you can never do that 100%. Even when you bring in sort of high-tech forensics and all the rest of it, there's still things that can go wrong, you know. But what you can do, and what courts do, is they go, well, can you believe this beyond reasonable doubt? And I guess that's the thing. Whenever you've got something that's claiming to happen in history, like, say, the resurrection and many of the other things that Jesus did, that's something that you can actually go back. And it's a really interesting exercise when you look at all kinds of really credible sources from the first century. And I think that there's a compelling case to say that actually Jesus really was who he was and did what he did. I mean, I'm not going to go through and bore you with all that now, but if that's something that you're interested in looking into, that's something I'd be very happy to help you look into. Now, I think there is always going to be that sort of element of faith there, because as with any history, that's going to be required. But I think the evidence for Christianity is really compelling. And so I suppose that would be how I'd answer that. Yeah, I guess me just standing here telling you that, sure, you might go, well, you've just come up with that to fill your God-shaped hole. But if God's actually done something to reveal himself in history, that can actually make for a really compelling way of kind of answering that, I guess.
Okay, second question. If you choose to follow God, what happens when something or someone that brings you joy is taken away from you? Is this God letting you down?
Yeah, that's a really personal one for me at the moment, because I think I mentioned last week that when I was 18, I lost my mother to cancer. Well, yesterday was actually the 20-year anniversary of that, so it's really fresh in my head because I was with my dad and my brother. My dad's not a Christian. My brother is. Last night we're having dinner and just kind of, I thought we'd just get together to sort of mark that occasion, and it was sort of an interesting conversation and sort of just sort of grappling with that a little bit, because, yeah, when you lose things, and particularly when you lose people that you really love and care about, that's a really painful experience. And it's a hard one. I mean, the short answer is no, God doesn't let you down, because he's good. And as we saw last week, he's in control. He's great. And that was the big thing that we looked at last week. And for those who were there then, it sort of, that feeds into this a little bit. And what we saw last week is that God's good life project for you is much bigger than what we tend to think of in our own little good life projects, because with our own little good life projects, often they're very small, they're very here and now, and they might sort of stem to, you know, perhaps just even getting to your retirement or whatever. Whereas what we saw tonight is that God's good life project for you is much, much bigger than that. It's actually eternal. It's actually the perfect you in a perfect world forever. It's much bigger than this life. And in fact, when you think about eternity, what you've got here in this life is so small and so insignificant that it just pales. But that's the mental shift. So you've got to think, well, actually, God's good life project for me is much, much bigger. And the thing that he's ultimately committed to and deeply passionate about doing is getting you to that big, eternal, everlasting good life state of being. Now, to do that, as I sort of said tonight, he'll do whatever it takes to get you there. And sometimes that does mean losing things. Sometimes that is hard. And sometimes you can't actually see how these things grow you and change you. Sometimes you can. Sometimes with a lot of hindsight you can. So I know particularly with older people that I've spoken to, and this is where elders are just fantastic because they've just got this amazing perspective that someone my age doesn't have. They go through all kinds of things and then can actually look back at their life and say to you, well, I can actually really see how that's formed, shaped, changed, done all kinds of things to me, you know. I can't guarantee you that you will actually ever, with some things, be able to see that. But I guess what the Bible would say is that one day you will understand and see all of that in its fullness, and you'll see how God has actually used all these things, not to let you down, but actually to shape you into the perfect you and give you the ultimate eternal good life.
And the final question, how can I be happy in heaven if my mates are in hell?
Yeah, that's a big one too. Now, if you don't know a lot about hell, we didn't sort of speak about it as hell necessarily in the Good Life Project, because I've tried not to use too much sort of jargony language. But we did kind of touch on it a little bit in our second Good Life Project talk, which was the talk about God being gracious, and in order to see God's grace in its fullness, you kind of have to look at the alternative, which what we saw was this idea of God not putting up with our imperfection and our wrecking his world and one another and all the rest of it forever, but actually doing something decisive to stop that. And what we saw was that rather than giving us what we deserve, which is that, to be shut out, and we kind of quoted the Matrix and all kind of stuff, God intervened, sent his son. Now, to answer that, I think you've got to understand the biblical doctrine of hell a little bit, because hell kind of, I think we think of hell and all these things come to mind. Largely, they've kind of come out of the medieval period where people came up with these terrifying, frightening sort of pieces of literature and artwork, and it's all about kind of, some of them are really grotesque. In fact, if you go back to look at it, it's sort of like a giant inferno torture chamber sort of horrific thing. I don't think that's so much what hell's like. I mean, the Bible uses lots of different language to describe it. And some of that is quite vivid and graphic, but it's generally picture language. And as you read the Bible, you've got to kind of do this all the time because it will use it's all kind of literature in the Bible, I suppose, is a good way of thinking it. You've got histories, you've got kind of poems. We read a little poem earlier tonight. And you've got these very symbolic, kind of visual, kind of gutsy images that are meant to comfort, disturb, worry, make you think, do all kinds of things. So that's the language of hell there. I think to put it really simply, the idea of hell, the biblical idea of hell, is more about separation than anything. And so if you've got this good, perfect world, the last thing you want in it are people the way we are now, imperfect people that are just going to mess it all up again. I guess that's kind of the rationale with it a bit. So if you think about what we've done with the planet that we have now, when we're sort of living without God as the Lord and King of our lives, well, you look around and you see what a mess we've made of it. We harm one another, we harm the world, we harm ourselves. Quite clearly, this world isn't perfect, and the big major reason for that is us. Now, what God's done is he's gone, look, I want to give you a way to have a new start and be recreated and have a new life in a new world. But that's not something I'm going to force on people or force people to go through. That's something that people can either choose to accept and pursue or something that people can reject and opt out of. And I think really that's the thing with hell. I think people kind of visualize God sort of throwing people into a big fiery furnace with them screaming for mercy. I don't think that's kind of the biblical picture at all. I think that actually the biblical picture is people getting to that end time and going, actually, God, I don't want to follow you. I don't want to live the life that you've offered me. I'd rather keep going my own way, pursuing my own good life project, and really God going, well, that's fine, but if that's how you're going to be, you can't come into this new world that I'm making that's going to be good and perfect, because you'd mess it up. That's just to kind of try and get the biblical picture. So the question is, how can I be happy in eternity if I've got friends, family, people that have done that? And I think it's hard to really understand it this side, because I think we'll have a perspective and an understanding on that side, but I think the thing that ultimately will come down will be going, well, God's dignified them with the ability to make their own choice about this. That's what they've chosen. Do I want this perfect world that God's remade and the perfect life that he's kind of created for me? Well, yeah, I do. And if they're not wanting to be a part of that, going to compromise that, then yeah, I something like that. I mean, it's a very hard one to answer, because I don't think we've quite got that eternal perspective, but I think that's probably how you get towards answering it, I guess. Yeah. Happy to talk about it more later on if you want to kind of come back and ask me more questions about it.
Yeah. All right. Good one. So thank you all so much for coming. Thanks, Dave, for getting up 4 weeks in a row and tackling those hard questions. I know it's been a good reminder to a lot of the Christians here in the room, and also a great insight to those who are new to all of this. Now, although tonight is the final night, we do hope it's not the end. We do really want to keep in touch with you. So there's a few things that I want to go through, just so I don't miss any information. In the back of the Good Life journals, there is a What's Next section. So I just want to read out a little bit about this. To find out more about Jesus, you're welcome to come along to the Encounters in Jesus series. This series will start at 9:30 a.m. on September 11 at Summerlees Christian Church, and will continue each Sunday until 9:30 a.m. until the 23rd of October. We meet weekly at Summerlees at 9:30 a.m. So this is just a good follow-up series from the Good Life Project that's actually running through to 23rd of October. But you can come anytime. You don't need to come for this entire series, but you can feel free to pop into Summerlees at any time. Perhaps you aren't sure about or don't believe some or all of the messages you've heard, or you have wondered how the message applies to you personally. If this is the case, we encourage you to keep thinking about and discussing what you've heard in these sessions with the person that you came with for these sessions. It would also be a good idea to investigate what you've heard more thoroughly yourself. A good place to start is by reading Mark's Gospel in the Bible. The Bible consists of two parts, the Old Testament and the New Testament. Mark's Gospel is the second book of the New Testament. We've actually got some little Mark's Gospel books. There's a stack of those over there. They're free, so grab one on the way out if you're interested in taking one of those. There's also some other things that you'll see. Tell us about it. You can talk directly to Dave about it. He's also offered that if anyone even feels like doing a course after this, rather than coming to church, he's also keen for anything like that. So let Dave know, or let someone that you know that knows Dave, and you want to talk about it like that. There's also some other things in the book. Talk to God, read the Bible, or come to church. I know personally for me, I've been going to Summerlee's Church for about 2 years now, but ever since Day Dot, when I first went there, I always found it such a nice and comfortable environment to be a part of. It always just felt very comfortable, like it does here tonight, minus the bar. There's coffee instead, but yeah, it's a nice place to be. So if you are interested for whatever reason, we'd love to see you there. So thank you, everyone. Stay around for some more drinks and some more chat if you're keen. But thanks again.